Warning: this interview contains adult language and is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised. It is also critical to note that, due to having only written correspondence with the author and therefore no verbal confirmation as such, the interviewees have mispronounced Renee Mason's first name as Renea, over and over and over again. The interviewees wish to apologize in advance for the blunder. Your forgiveness is greatly appreciated. And now, back to our regularly scheduled programming. Hello, Mad Masons. This is Noah Michael Levine and
Aaron DeWard.
We are your narrators for Renea's wonderful Curing Dr. Vincent. Now, we've been told that you have some questions, so we're going to answer them to the best of our ability. Is it ability or abilities?
To the best of our abilities.
Abilities. I stand corrected. So, first we have a question from Elizabeth, who asks, and of course this is probably the most thought about question, is it awkward to read the sex scenes? Aaron, why don't you begin?
No, it's not awkward at all to read the sex scenes, mostly because they're really well written and they're really fun to read. And we enjoy reading them together. It sounds so stupid. I'm sorry. I'll have another sip of wine.
I would agree. The sex scenes are not awkward to read, especially when they're well written. You know, it's a situation as an actor, we place ourselves in that mindset and it just kind of flows because the writing is there to support it.
Can I add something?
Oh, please do.
All right. So in chapter four, the first time that Elaine is with all three men, well, and Jacques, when we were recording it, I wasn't really thinking about the words we were saying. We were just in it and we were recording it. But then when I went back to edit it and I had to listen to it, it was hot. And I didn't even realize while we were recording it that it was that hot, but it's hot.
I realized while we were recording it that it was hot, but I didn't listen to it during the editing process. So, you know, I think that's only fair. It worked out that way. Yeah. Elizabeth also asks, do you sit still to do the reading or do you gesticulate a lot in character? Now, mind you, you can gesticulate while sitting, but it's not the same.
No.
So we record standing up in a sound booth. And although it's a bit close quarters, I would say there's a fair amount of gesticulation going on.
I think that the gesticulation actually helps to get you in the moment, get you in the character, especially when you're doing multiple characters. To have that different physicality for each one is helpful in maintaining the separateness between the characters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that leads to a question from, and I'm not sure if we're going to pronounce this correctly, Ki or Kai, who asks, when it's a dual reading, do you read together or separately on our own time? Technically, we could do this separately, but we happen to live in the same town, and it's easy to work in the same space. And as actors, much better to work off each other by reading at the same time. One of the things that I love about the way Erin works is that she's right on top of things, like coming in with the narration right after dialogue that keeps the pacing going. And it's a much different experience than narrating something alone.
Yeah, I have to agree. Also, two things. One is that when you can make eye contact with your fellow actors, it makes an inordinate difference in being able to, it makes it so that you really stay in the scene because you are acting, not reading. There's a big difference between the two, I think.
Huge difference.
And the other thing is, from an editing standpoint, the idea of taking Noah's work and my work on separate tracks and integrating the two is daunting in the sense that it would take such a long amount of time to cut and paste and cut and paste and cut and paste in that way and make sure that the timing is right and there are no clicks and the sound quality from my booth and his booth are the same quality, because actually each space has a different set of sound qualities, reverberation and background noises and things of that nature. So to make them sound...
I have no idea what the hell she's talking about, but go ahead.
I'll just have some more wine and I'll shut up.
She's using a lot of big words that I really don't understand. But no, I'm teasing. Please, go ahead.
At any rate, trying to make them sound like they came from the same space would be difficult, and pasting them together would be also. So it's a lot more fun all around to do it together.
I agree. Okay, Shari asks, what made you want to read for an audiobook? And she also asks, do you two have a personal relationship, or is it strictly business? Well, Erin, what made you want to read for an audiobook?
That's a really good question. I guess I just love to act. That's all I've ever wanted to do in my life, ever. From the time I could speak, I harassed my parents about it. And this is just one more way to do that. What about you?
Well, before we get to me, I will say that Erin performs Shakespeare, and I've seen her. And she's brilliant. She's a wonderful actress. Actor. What is it correct?
I like actor. But,
okay. You're a wonderful actor. And, you know, I'm so happy that she's now doing this audiobook work, because she should be acting more as much as possible, because she's, you know, she's got this organic wonderfulness about her. And
he's really too kind.
No, I'm not. What made me want to read for an audiobook? Well,
an easy question to answer, right?
Well, the thing is, I never even thought about doing this. This was not even on my radar of things in life to do. And I've been acting for a long time. And, of course, I remember hearing about books on tape, but it never clicked in my head, oh, I should do that. I moved back to New York from California, and there was Hurricane Sandy, and I was without power for a week or 10 days, and I ran into an old buddy of mine who edits audiobooks for Audible, and he knew about my background in acting and so forth, and he said, you know, you should get in touch with them. I'd never thought about it before. So... it wasn't a world that I was aware of. And now that I've found it for the past almost 2.5 years, it's amazing. I mean, to be able to get up every day and act and read works by wonderful authors, it's really, I'm very appreciative for it. So I could say now what makes me want to do it is that I love the work. It's fun. It's difficult at times, of course. It's very intricate, and trying to parse out the different characters and their emotions. And when the works are well written, it flows very naturally, and it's just a blast.
But what a great challenge for an actor, right? So, you know, in traditional acting, you play a part. If you're lucky, maybe you're in a company, you play multiple parts. But, you know... when do you have the opportunity, you, Noah, when do you have the opportunity to play different female characters? When do I have the opportunity to play different male characters?
It
just doesn't really happen
it
like
doesn't.
That. And so, you know, it's a unique acting challenge, but it's also a wonderful acting opportunity that, you know, you get to put yourself inside a man's head and be a man, or inside a woman's head and be a woman, or
and
multiple.
And I'm learning, working with Erin. I mean, you know, I usually do my own female voices in various shades of ugliness that they come out.
Stop.
You know, so I'm listening to Erin work, and I'm thinking, wow, I wouldn't have said that that way. And it's really interesting that she said it that way. So I'm going to be able to then bring, you know, some of that inspiration to other characters I do in books where I'm working by myself. Okay, the second part of Shari's questioning was, do you two have a personal relationship or is it strictly business? What did we come up with on this one?
Define business.
Okay. Well, we are best friends and our business is very pleasurable. I think we're going to leave it at that. Anything you want to?
Nope.
Okay.
That's good. Let's move on to the next question.
Why don't you take this one?
Yeah, Lisa. Lisa asks, have you done audiobooks for other genres, and do you have a favorite genre? Noah?
I have done a pretty wide variety of genres, from nonfiction works in philosophy and history and literary critique. I did a couple years back, I think, four different books that were set in the time period of the Kennedy assassination and its aftermath. So there's all that stuff. Within the fiction world, there have been thrillers and fantasy and romance. So a pretty wide variety. I can't say that I have a favorite genre because it really just depends on the author. For me, and maybe Aaron finds the same, you can tell when an author is passionate about their writing, and that can be fiction or nonfiction. So when that passion comes across in the words, it makes it fun and easy to narrate, and it really makes the work just wonderful to do. So I've done an awful lot of romance stuff. And I certainly like doing romance stuff in different types because there are so many subgenres. But it really is more about the writing itself.
I agree. The genres that I've done so far, this is relatively new to me. I'm an audio describer, which means that I describe visual media for people who have low or no vision to help them access it. So audiobooks are fairly new to me. The genres that I've done so far have been mystery, romance, erotic romance, I guess, is what you'd call it.
Does German dungeon porn count as a separate genre in and of itself?
Yeah. Well, so I'm not sure that that author would call it dungeon porn. I affectionately refer to it as dungeon porn because actually that's what it was.
Because it took place in a dungeon.
It did. It did. Okay. And it was all about dubious consent.
Which is a separate sort of subgenre in it of its own.
Dubcon, yeah.
Yeah.
That was interesting. And thrillers, mysteries and thrillers. So I have to say that I think Noah's absolutely correct. It depends on the author. But I think if I had to pick a genre that I really prefer, it's that sort of suspenseful thriller type book where the characters are in danger and there's a lot of different highs and lows that are intense as opposed to maybe some of the other genres where the highs and lows are less intense.
See, but I think when you start to do more stuff like one of the Kennedy era assassination books was called The Last Investigation. Oops.
Boom.
I just made a boom. Sorry. And now I'm going to eat a vodka-soaked gorgonzola-stuffed olive because that is how I'm rolling right now. Sorry about that.
Mm. Oh, man, you're making so much noise.
Okay, so what I'm saying is this guy, his name is Gaten Fonzi, wrote this book, and he was so passionate about how we were misled by the Warren Committee, how the Warren Commission report was flawed in so many ways. And he was actually part of the second investigation in the 70s. And I think were you to do a nonfiction piece like that, mm-hmm. with that type of passion into it, I think you would find that very rewarding and fascinating.
Well, I have to say, I mean, when I did nonfiction for Learning Ally, which used to be a recording for the blind and dyslexic, I did enjoy it. I also did some really bizarre nonfiction, like trigonometry textbooks, which is really interesting. Really, really
Sorry.
Interesting. And then you have to describe the graphs also and all of that so that, you know, the student is getting the full experience of reading the book.
Hey, how's your rhombus triangle?
Yeah, my rhombus triangle is really hot, man, let me tell you. If I were clever, I would be able to say something better than that, but I'm just not that clever. But some of the nonfiction, particularly memoir, I really enjoyed when I was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think that it has to do with how it's written.
Absolutely. Patty asks, how did you find your way into this business? What advice do you have for someone interested in this career? And is it difficult to do a story you don't care for?
Great questions,
Excellent
Patty.
Excellent questions, Patty. I'm going to have to have a little sip of vodka before
getting
into this
one. I'm jumping in.
You go, girl.
Okay.
You go, girl.
How did I find my way into this business? So I've been working with advocacy organizations for... Have a little more wine, Aaron. I've been working with advocacy organizations for a while. And we're not winos, by the way. It's just evening.
Now, hold on a second here.
We've worked hard all day.
I want to say something. I forgot what I was going to say. Go ahead.
For people with a variety of disabilities, but working with Learning Ally, I got really involved in providing access, or usability, I prefer to say, to people who have low and no vision. And so that's sort of how I found my way into this business of doing voice work in the first place. It's why I set up a studio in my home. It's how I met Noah. Through a mutual friend who knew that we both did voice work but didn't really understand the differences between what we were doing. But thank goodness she didn't understand. Thank you, Emily.
Ignorance is blessing.
Right, the differences between what we were doing, because as a result of our friendship, I find myself here talking to you now, which is a wonderful opportunity, and I'm really, really grateful. And what advice do I have for someone interested in this career? Well, the first piece of advice you're not going to like, but that is go take a class. I know that people always say that to aspiring actors, but I do have to say that I feel strongly in order to be a good narrator, you need to be a good actor. And it is a different skill set than being a Shakespearean actor or a Broadway actor or a, you know, film actor. It's a different skill set. It takes a different...
A mime. It's very different from being a mime.
Yes, very different. Marcel Marceau in a box. But I do feel like if you're really, truly interested in this, the way to begin is to go and take a class. Find out whether you love to act. And if you do love to act, see if you can find in your town or the nearest city an audiobook class. They're there, especially in the larger markets like Los Angeles and New York. So if you're close to those places, it's pretty easy to find a class. Now, the thing is, I would also say to you that there are a lot of charlatans. My goodness, wine does make your
charlatans.
Tongue do funny things.
Yes. Sadly, actors are a group of people who are often taken advantage of by those who know how to do so, offering classes that don't really teach what they should, projecting certain opportunities they will offer after the class that don't really materialize. But, you know, not everyone, of course, is like that. But you just have to
be mindful.
See if you can find somebody who's taken that class before and what their experience was. One of the important things is, because I think both Aaron and I get asked fairly frequently, how can I get into that?
Go ahead.
What were you going to say?
Nothing. I wasn't going to say
anything. You sure?
Yes. No, okay. I'm done.
All right. It's not just like reading a book out loud. You have to carry characters through the arc of the story the average audiobook is 8 to 10 hours long. I've done some that are 20, 25, 30 hours long. So you have to really be involved in the different characters' stories and able to consistently bring that performance. So it's not as simple as just reading a book, although, of course, you are reading a book out loud. There's a lot more to it than that, and that's not even getting into the technical aspects of the software you use, the computer, the type of microphone.
Having a soundproof dead space that you can record in so that you're not getting truck noise and dog barking and leaf blowing and reverberation. And, you know, so to build my home studio cost, I mean, I hate to say this, but it cost me about $8,000 to build my home studio. Not everybody goes that route.
I bought mine.
Yes, you did.
I bought mine and it was shipped here. And then her husband and a friend helped me put it together, and now we're standing in it.
Right.
So,
but anyway, those are all the things that, you know, people think, oh, I love reading out loud to my kids. I really would like to do this for a living. And I'm not saying that that's not a good way to get into it, but it's a lot more complex than that. And you may be great at reading books to your children, which certainly I think I was when, and my husband was, and a lot of people that I know are, but there's more to it than that. And now as the business is progressing and people aren't recording in studios with engineers as much anymore, they're doing much more home recording, being contracted to do much more home recording. You have to be your own director and engineer. So you have to understand how the software works. You have to understand how the hardware works, which is not my forte. Ask Noah, he'll tell you.
I don't know. I'd say you're pretty good with hardware, but... Oh, can I say that? Sorry. I'm sorry.
So
go ahead.
Is it difficult to do a story you don't care for, Noah?
In a word, yes. Yes, it is. It is. It is difficult. It hasn't happened very often. There have only been, out of 100-plus books, maybe 3 or 4 that I found no redeeming qualities to. And of course, I'm not going to say which ones those were. Even in books, though, that I only care for a little in terms of the writing or the characters, there's almost always something compelling to find. And sometimes it's in the page. Sometimes it's in our own creation of what we put into the character, but that's our job. You know, whether or not we like a story, our job is to bring that story to light with voice.
Yep.
So actors don't always have the luxury of loving the script, the story, the film, the play that they're working on, but it's their job to act and to bring that best performance possible to the audience that's going to be seeing or hearing them.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, any actor who's gone through the beginnings of an acting career will tell you that we've all done scripts we hated, that made no sense, that were ridiculous, but you do what you have to do to get your career off the ground. And so...
I mean, we're working on this book right now by, I don't know, Reneus something. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's garbage.
Stop. Here's the thing. Someone like Renea, a writer like Renea, gives you so much because it isn't just romance. It isn't just sex. It isn't just anticipation. There's humor. There's humanity. There's so many layers to this book that it's just a joy to work on it. We look forward to doing a chapter a day because it's joyful work. I know that sounds crazy, but that's the truth.
I was telling Aaron yesterday, I think, you know, we had done chapter 4, which is a very provocative scene. And it was amazing to me what came across in how much Dr. Vincent and Elaine were connected in the way that was his intention mm-hmm. in setting this whole thing up. So, you know, Marco and Sebastian are there and they're functioning as the doctor's
extensions.
Thank you for that very politically correct choice of word. And yet he and Elaine were just really locked in sync. Mm-hmm. And that's not an easy sort of scene to pull off and make it really make that feeling come through. And so Renea did an awesome job with that. And so this has been a great project to work on.
Absolutely.
Which leads right into the next question, which is, what made you decide? This is from Mary. I'm sorry. Mary asked, what made you decide to try to do this particular book/series? And I think that we should answer this question in character. Elaine, would you do me a favor?
Yeah, sure. What is it?
I'd like you to tell me what made you decide to do this particular book.
The doctor looked into my eyes, and I felt my knees go weak. I felt like I wanted to do this book because when I read the audition, it just sparked something inside of me. A string of something was plucked in my insides vibrated to it, and that was really bad, Renea. I apologize. I'm not a writer. Clearly, I'm not a writer.
Elaine, you're wonderful. And you're beautiful.
Exquisite, please.
And you're exquisite.
So, really.
Your writing sucks.
Yes, my writing sucks.
We leave that to Renea.
So, Xavier.
Yes, Elaine.
What was it that made you want to do this particular series?
Elaine, I really had no choice. I was compelled by forces unknown, drawn, if you will.
Yeah, see, you suck at it too. Renea, you're much better than we are.
To this project, the specter of working close with you side by side in confined quarters.
With my blue velvet gown.
With your blue velvet gown. Mm. And the smelly stuff that I have on the walls that makes the sound nice and deep.
Okay, so for real?
For real. We were looking for a project to do together, and there aren't all that many that we've found where there are male-female narrators working together, and we came across this one. We read the audition.
We had so much fun reading the audition. It was a blast. And the best part of it was that, so we were really excited because we had so much fun doing the audition. And so we uploaded it immediately. And then for the rest of the evening, we kept checking emails. We were like, did she get back to us? And then boom, she got back to us. And she's like, oh my God, you were great. And we were like, oh my God, she likes us. So then we kept checking emails to make sure that, you know, the offer was accepted. And then suffice it to say, we were really, really, really happy and excited because it's something clicked for us when we read this audition, and we knew we were going to enjoy doing this.
So Tammy asks the question that Elizabeth asked, which is reading the sex scenes uncomfortable? But she also adds, when dual reading, if you're reading it together, makes it uncomfortable. I think we can just say no to that. It's perfectly, perfectly comfortable. We're both comfortable with who we are and with the wide world of sex as it is, and the way that Renea has kind of laid all of this out is wonderfully seductive and erotic, and it's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think that maybe if we weren't the people that we are, we might find...
We'd be other people.
That's true. We would be other... Go ahead, have some more vodka.
Hey.
I think Noah's correct. We're very comfortable in our own sexualities. And as a result of that, we kind of revel in the sex scenes rather than being uncomfortable in them. It's kind of like when you're on a movie set and you have to do a stage kiss. You have to do a kiss, well, on stage or on film. And you can't think, you can't have the devil on your shoulder judging how you're doing it. You just have to be that person kissing that other person. And this is sort of the same thing. There were words instead of actions, but I really feel it's the same exact motivation. Well, that's not the word I want, but it's the same exact thing. You put yourself in that person's shoes and you have to live it and go with it in the same way that you would on film.
You know, sex is... it's an incredible arena of human emotion and physicality. And frankly, I think that, you know, this would be a probably somewhat calmer world if especially our friends in Washington were having more sex and not, you know, not stuff that they have to hide from the papers, you know, just I don't care what people's orientation is, you know, men, women, plants, you know, it's just sex is good. It's good for our bodies. It's good for our souls. And so the romance genre of books and audiobooks, I think, lets people explore that, maybe doing things in their mind that they would never do in real life, or maybe giving them ideas of things they'd like to do. But it's all good.
Yeah,
as long as nobody gets hurt and nobody is being
coerced, then
it's all good.
That's, you know, I just have to jump in because we were talking about DubCon before, and I am the mother of a teenage son who's a sophomore in college, who has drilled it into my head and into my younger child's head the importance of consent. And that was not something that we talked about when we were their ages. We didn't think about consent or lack of consent. And I think that we live in a very puritanical country in some ways, in other ways not at all, which is the dichotomy just blows my mind. But anyway, I digress. As long as whatever a person is doing is consensual, enthusiastically consensual, I think it's great. And I don't think that our puritanical values should suppress that. I think that I think that people are doing things behind closed doors that they would be embarrassed or ashamed to admit to their friends, their family. But I don't understand why. Because the fact is, it's all part of the human experience. And as long as everyone is enthusiastically consenting to whatever it is, then there's nothing wrong with it. There is no boundary, there's no line.
We're not brought up that way.
We're not.
And that's the problem. And I think this is a problem from my personal point of view, a bigger problem for men. You know, there is a tremendous amount of violence and neglect and irresponsibility happening in this world caused by men. And part of that mindset, I think, comes from the sort of traditional ways that we have been taught of what it means to be a man in this world and what it means to be important and strong. And you know, some of those things maybe need to be turned on their side a little bit. And so I kind of wish more men read some of these romance novels to open themselves up to maybe... I don't know what the hell I'm saying. We're going to have to cut this part out.
No. I think we should leave it. And I'll tell you why I think we should leave it. Because, all right, so yes, we've had a little bit to drink. But I think we should leave it because I think this is stuff that doesn't get talked about enough. And I think that in this particular genre, there are things that the people who are reading it or listening to it, me included, you know, we allow our brains to go to places that we don't typically give ourselves permission to go to. And I think that that's healthy. I don't think that that's bad or wrong. And I think that you're right. If men were allowed to go to those places in the same way that women are allowed to go to those places, we'd all be much happier in some ways. I wish that it wasn't confined to a genre of literature. You know, I wish that it was a greater discussion in the society that we live in, where we felt free to investigate what our fantasies are. Just because you fantasize about something doesn't mean you're necessarily going to do it.
Right.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with fantasy. Fantasy is a wonderful thing. And even if you were to go ahead and experiment and do it, that's okay too. It's all good. We're put on this planet to enjoy our lives and to be good to one another. And that's it. I mean, really, that's what it boils down to.
And here you have the character of Dr. Vincent, who he has a backstory that we're not very clear on, which possibly entertained some abuse in his childhood. And he grew up a certain way and had trouble with intimacy and sexuality. Then he meets his wife, who was his teacher, I'm fascinated by the backstory of these characters and what's happened in their lives before we've started narrating this book. But here he is now. He's a wealthy man. He's a powerful man. But he's a thought-provoking and emotional man. And he is trying to get in touch with that more intimate connection that he really knows that he wants. And so, you know, to kind of tie all of this stuff together, you know, I think if men had the opportunity to feel that that was okay to have that kind of intimacy in their lives, then maybe we wouldn't be killing each other so much. I don't know.
I think you're right. Okay, enough digression. Back to the questions.
Okay. I think this question is also from Tammy, who asks, how many accents are you versed in? And what or who is the most unusual character you've portrayed in an audiobook?
Okay, accents are not my thing. Noah and I talk about this all the time because he does accents just when he's speaking. He'll just drop into accents.
What are you talking about? You're crazy.
He does. For me, I do allow the devil on my shoulder to watch me and listen to me when I do accents. So much so that I end up being paralyzed and I just sit in front of the mic with the tape running and in silence, running over things in my head until finally I allow myself to speak. But so I feel like the ones that I'm competent at now are New York, general American, a slight Southern. I can do a heavy Southern, but it's kind of like a Georgia Southern. I can't really quite make it be Western Texas kind of, you know, it's pretty heavily Southern Belle Georgia type. I can do French. And when I allow myself to be relaxed, I can do British. But I have to allow myself to not judge. Because I do.
Maybe you need to take a schwitz before you do that.
I
do. Nice and relaxing.
Beat myself with some birch.
There you go. Yeah. That sounds nice.
Yeah.
An olive branch.
Right.
And so what or who is the most unusual character?
No. Accents.
Oh, accents. Okay. So, you know.
Ow.
You all right?
Yes.
Did you hurt yourself?
Nope.
Do we need to call an ambulance?
Nope.
Okay. We're good. I can do a lot of accents. It's just something I can do. I don't know how I know how to do it. I just have an ear for it, so I love doing it. It's fun. I pick up stuff from people I'm around, from movies I've seen, or conglomerations of different actors' voices. So, I mean, I'm not that great at imitating. You know, like if I did a Sean Connery, you'd say, oh, that sounds like Sean Connery, but it doesn't sound like Sean Connery. Or like James Mason, whatever. But, you know, Russian, British, French, Italian, Spanish.
Old Jew.
New York, Boston.
Chicago.
Don't forget Chicago. Midwestern. I mean, it's just, I'm very fortunate to have an ear for it. So it's helped me in doing audiobooks because, you know, in a heavy character book, everybody's got to sound different. So the register of my voice, the tones that my voice will actually create, they're within a certain range. And so I don't have that much flexibility. But if I add an accent to that, that helps me to differentiate between characters so that the listener knows that's who's speaking at this point and someone else is speaking at another point. So I'm very grateful for that that gift. Most unusual character. I have to say, I narrated one of the most difficult books about Auschwitz. And it was written by a survivor. And he was a Polish man who had been taken to the camp and was facing certain death. But he had been a doctor. And he was used as an assistant in the experiments that Mengele was doing. And so he documented this just bone-crushing, soul-searing account of his time at Auschwitz. It was not a particularly well-written book, and you wouldn't necessarily expect it to be because he's not a writer by trade. But having to speak his words and convey the sentiments both of horrifying guilt and extreme joy and the tragedy and horror of it was very difficult. The most unusual character, there was one of my first projects was an 18-book humorous young adult fantasy series called The Myth Adventures. And in that series, I probably did about 500 different characters, but the core group of people consisted of some really interesting and fun, and one of them was a character named Oz, A-H-Z, and he was kind of like a crotchety old Jewish man, but he had a heart of gold and really shined through with the way his character blossomed across the series. So that was an interesting character to play.
Don't forget to say you've also done Talking Cats.
Yes, I have.
And Talking Houses.
And Talking Houses, yes.
Or Sentient Houses, I should say.
Robin D. Owen's Celta series. I think there were 13 books in that. And that at certain times involved cats and dogs and wolves and even houses that could communicate. And so those communications had to be done verbally. And I think, thankfully, the author, Robin D. Owens, sort of made those moments, some of them anyway, sort of the comic relief, so that the voices that I used for the cats in particular, you know, tended to be kind of, you know, like, hey, New York-y, kind of like this or something like that, you know? So it gave a nice little fun spin to the rest of the story, which was pretty, I don't want to say pretty serious, but there was a lot of different stuff going on.
I'm going to say for me, the most unusual characters, maybe not that unusual, and I'm going to say characters because the situation itself was unusual, and that was Deadly Captive by Bianca Summerland. There are two people who don't know each other who are trapped in this dungeon together. We learn their stories as we go on, but basically the beginning of the book starts with the woman waking up and finding that there's a chain in her mouth. She has no memory. She can't see. She can see light and dark, but she can't make out any kinds of shapes. And she's in a room. She doesn't know where she is. She just knows she's bleeding, and her mouth is full of blood and spit, and she has this chain in her mouth, and she realizes that she's chained, and her legs are forced apart, by some kind of spreader, and that she's naked, and then someone, a man, you know, coaches her from the side, and she has no idea who he is. She can't see him. She doesn't know where she is. And I think that that was, see, again, I'm not going to say unusual, although the situation certainly was unusual. I think...
That doesn't sound like your regular breakfast, sort of getting up in the morning
scenario. No. So putting myself in the shoes, in the shackles of the woman as she wakes up and finds herself in this situation, and she doesn't even know her name. She doesn't have any memory of her life before this moment, you know, and what that would be like as an adult to wake up and know nothing about yourself, not even what you look like, not, you know, it's bad enough not to know where you are, but to not know who you are. And to come into consciousness, not only knowing nothing about yourself, but being physically harmed in that way, it was a really interesting investigation for me, personally, to think about that and to feel that. And then also to be the man in that scene who's trying to save her, protect her, comfort her without letting their audience, because there's an audience watching them, know that that's what he's doing. Because if they do know that that's what he's doing, she'll be killed. And he's lived through that several times. So his point of view of trying to be there for her, trying to help her and guide her and protect her without showing that that's what he's doing while he's under intense scrutiny, that was also a really interesting thing to investigate. So, yeah, that's what I'm going to say.
All right. Well, I think we've...
gone on for a long time.
We've covered everything and a lot more. anything else you want the listeners and or readers to know?
Just that we're happy to answer your questions. If you have any more, please send them along to Renea. We would love to answer them and to have a dialogue with you, because it's not something that we often get to do.
Hear, hear.
Cheers.
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 Well, this has been, my voice is just suddenly going.
It's been an inordinate pleasure.
It has been an inordinate pleasure.
All right, do Dr. Vincent, you won't choke then.
Elaine. I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak to these mad, mad Masons and share with them a little of our experience.
I hope we haven't bored you. We really enjoyed this. And thank you, Renea.
Thank you, Renea.